Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara here is continuing to discuss the limud of Rabbi Meir. We just said that what was the reason behind Rabbi Meir's position that he thinks that Behema, Chaya, and Oph were considered to be a discharge, that is, a Leida. He learned that out from the Gezer Shava of Yetzirah, Yetzirah. Now, the Gemara noted that that Gezer Shava was Mufne Mishnei Tzadim, that it had to be that it was extraneous on both sides, in order that it be a strong Gezer Shava, either because it has the additional benefit of Ein Meshivin, we don't ask logical questions on it, or for Rabbi Yishmael, it has the advantage of the fact that if we are comparing the option of taking a Gezer Shava that has extraneous words on both sides versus a Gezer Shava that has extraneous words only on one side, we prefer give advantage to the one that has extraneous words on both sides. And that's why we learned the Gzer Shava Vayitzer Vayitzer over the Gzer Shava Vayivra Vayivra. That's what we left off with, and that was Machloket that we brought in the name of Shmuel as to what was the Machloket between the Chachamim and Rabbi Shmuel in the Gzer Shava when you have none of the words extraneous, you have one of the words that are extraneous, or you have both words that are extraneous. And we had Shmuel's opinion yesterday. Now we have a different version of that Machloket, which is Elazar. So we have a different version of this machlok between the Chachamim, Rabbi Shmuel, Lekula. He does it in a more lenient basis, which means that they're more open to Gzeret Shavot. And that is, Kol Gzer Shava She'en Mufneh Kol Ikar. They have a Gzer Shava where neither one of the words used in the Gzer Shava is extraneous. Lemedim. We can learn the Gzer Shava Umeshivin. But we still then would be open to asking logical questions, undermining the Gzer Shava. In Shmuel's view, if it was a Gzer Shava that had nothing that was extraneous, neither words were extraneous, then we wouldn't learn the Gzer Shava at all. So this is the Kula side of this version that comes from Rabbi Elazar. Mufne mitzad echad, if one of the two words is extraneous, l'Rabbi Yishmael l'meidim ve'ein meshivin. According to Rabbi Yishmael, we learn the Gzer Shava, and it has the power to block any logical undermining of the Gzer Shava. The Rabbanan Lemedim Umeshivin. And according to the Rabbanan, we learn such a Gzer Shava, but it's still exposed to the possibilities of being undermined logically. Mufne Mishneit Tzadim, if it's extraneous on both sides, meaning both words are unnecessary, and therefore they're available for the Limud, Divrei Hakol Lemedim Ve'en Meshivin. And everybody there agrees that you can learn the Gzer Shava, and we do not ask any logical questions against the Gzer Shava. We do not undermine it. Ularabanan, ma'ika ben mufne mitzad echad, l'she'ene mufne kol ikar. So, in the previous version that we had with Shmuel, we asked this question on Rabbi Shmuel, which was, what was the difference between mufne mitzad echad and mufne mishnei tzadim? Because according to him, both of them are l'medim, ve'ein meshivin. So, if that's the case, what was the distinction between them? And the Gemara said, it's a question of priority. We have to prioritize which Gzer Shava to put into effect will give precedence to the Gzer Shava that has extraneous words on both sides versus one side. We have the same problem here in the version of Rabbi Elazar with regards to the Rabbanan. So according to the Rabbanan, both in a case where neither of the words is extraneous, in the case where one of the words is extraneous, we learn the Gzer Shava, Umeshivin. But we do ask logical questions against it. So then, is there a distinction between a Gzer Shava that has nothing that is extraneous versus one that has one word that is extraneous? And that's what Gemara says. The Rabbanon, Ma'ika ben Mufne mitzad echad, L'sheine Mufne kol ikar. They have the same din. So Nafkamina once again is similar. Echad mishkachad la Mufne mitzad echad, V'sheine Mufne kol ikar. I have two possible Gzerot Shavot that I can learn with the word or decision in terms of what is extraneous or not. One of them is a Gzer Shava that includes one word that's extraneous. The other one is a Gzer Shava that includes no words that are extraneous. V'lav l'hai itlei pircha, v'lav l'hai itlei pircha. And neither one of the Gzer Shava has a logical undermining to it. Shavkinan she'enu mufne kol ikar will leave the Gzer Shava that has no words that are extraneous. V'gamrina mufne mitzad echad. And we learn it out from the Gzer Shava that has one of the two sides that is extraneous. So the Gemara answers similar to it did in the previous situation, which is, when we have halacha that's the same with regards to Gzer Shava and the ability to be Meshivin Aleha, if there's no difference in the rules of such a Gzer Shava, then the differentiation between whether it has or doesn't have extraneous words to it will be priority. whether we take up the Gzeres Shavah that has, in the case for Rabbi Shmuel, two Mufneh versus Mufneh Echad, and for the Chachamim, it means if you have a Gzeres Shavah that has Mufneh Mitzad Echad versus a Gzeres Shavah that's not Mufneh at all. And the reason for that distinction, even though they have the same din, is to tell us that there is priority given to the one that has more extraneous words in it. The whole discussion here is somewhat interesting. I'm just noting it again, that we discussed previously that ein adam dan gzer shavah me'atzmo. A person can't put together gzer shavah of his own volition. It has to be something that he got bit misora. If you got a bit misora, then what exactly does it mean over here? First of all, meshivin, that you can undermine it logically. If the gzer shavah exists bit misora, it's got to be there for a reason. And if it's there for a reason, why does it matter that it's undermined logically? The Gzeres Shavah must be doing something. So that already opens up Pandora's box over here with regards to Gzeres Shavot, that maybe this is speaking about a different type of Gzeres Shavah. Maybe this is speaking about the type of Gzeres Shavah that people are doing on their own volition, and that is subject to a logical undermining. And so that maybe there is such a concept of the Gzeres Shavah that comes from an individual versus that through Misora. Or you have to say, again, like we've said previously, that this idea that Gzeres Shavah comes from Misora does not mean that we know exactly what the Gzeres Shavah is and what we learn from the Gzeres Shavah. We have information or part information as to there are Gzeres Shavot, or maybe this word is involved in a Gzeres Shavah, or maybe there are a certain number of Gzeres Shavot, and all of those then lead us to try to figure out or narrow down what is the Gzeres Shavah, and the rules over here help us to identify what would be the proper Gzeres Shavah in these instances. Now the Gemara says over here, V'halcha my pircha iko. The Gemara concluded before that we opted to have the Gzeres Shavah vayitzer, because there it's mufne mishnei tzadim on both sides, where ein meshivin, where you can't ask a logical question on it, versus the one of vayivra, where there is a logical undermining. And that's what the Gemara wants to know, what would have been the logical undermining that you would have utilized to undo the Gzeres Shavah. The halcha my pircha iko, mishum diko lemifrach, mala adam shekein mitamei michaim. Adam has a chumra that he is mitamei while he's still alive, as opposed to all the other items of creation, whereby they're only mitamei once they have died. Meaning a sheretz, an animal, all these items are not mikabel tuma as long as they're alive. They're only mikabel tuma once they have died. That's not true of a human being. A human being can have tuma even while they're still alive. And that makes human beings unique in that fashion. So that's why we would say that there is a logical undermining of any Gzeres Shavah that is not supported in such a manner that it can override the logical problems of connecting these two items. The Tosafot Arosh over here asks, why don't we learn it through a Me'atzad? We have all these animals, if we put them together, that are included in the Gzeres Shavah. And if you put them together, maybe you could have a limud that would teach you that which we're looking for. So in each of the cases, the Tosfot Rosh comes up with a pircha, comes up with a item that's either a common denominator or something that would undermine the ability to use a me'atzad in this case. And then the Gemara says, V'chein amar Rabbi Chiya b'ava, amar Rabbi Yochanan, hainu taima de Rabbi Meir. This is the reasoning behind Rabbi Meir. We're going back to what was the logic of Rabbi Meir in our Mishnah. Ho v'nemar bo yitzira ke'adam. Because these items, meaning the animals, have a verb of yitzirah that's used by them similar to that of a human being. And that's why if the woman discharges such a form, she's tamei tumat leida. Amalei Rabbi Ami elemeato. If that is the basis for Rabbi Meir's position, then a mapelet dmut har, a woman who discharges something that looks like a mountain, imot me'ad leida. Mother, meaning the one who is giving birth to that, should be tamei tumat leida. Shenemar, because we have the pasuk in Amos, kinei yotzer harim ubore ruach. Hashem is the creator of the mountains and creator of the wind. And the Gemara is going to second show that this pasuk is extraneous on this side, meaning that it is a case whereby we would have gzer shava, which is mufne mishnei tzadim. The word yotzer over here and the word vayitzer by Adam. And therefore, it would be a Gzeres Shavah that you would make without any logical undermining affecting it. And the reason that it is extraneous is because there are two verbs that are used in the Pasuk. You could have consolidated the items in the Pasuk and either written Kinei Bore Harim Uve Ruach or Kinei Yotzer Harim Veruach. So one of the two words here is extraneous. And given that, you could have made such a Gzeres Shavah. Samalei, har, become a pilot. Since when does a woman discharge or have a miscarriage of a mountain? Evan he, the reason you're calling it a mountain is because it looks like a stone. It looks like some sort of rock formation. So if she's Evan he, come a pellet, how gush ikre? That's not called a mountain. That's called a clod or a block of something. It's not called a mountain. Whatever she's discharging, maybe it looks similar or reminds you of a har, but certainly is not a har. And therefore, the question is not really a good question. Elamihato, if that's the case, I'm a pellet ruach. A woman who discharges, we're calling it ruach here, you know, literally means wind or air. But the way that the Gemara speaks about mapelet ruach means that she discharges something that is nothing. It's not something that has a real form to it. It's not something that would be considered a fetus or a discharge that's considered to be a leida. So over here, ironically, because it's a ruach, because it is considered to be a ruach and the pasuk mentions ruach, then te'imom t'mei ha-leida. Should be t'mei ha-leida, even though whatever she's discharging is not really a leida. That's why it's a ruach, because hoven emra bo bria ka'adam. Because the word bore is used by the ruach, like vayivra is used by Adam. Yechtevo ve'ore ruach. If you tell me that it's not extraneous, it could have combined the two items to a single verb. And yet it separated them. That makes it extraneous. And that's what I noted before in the opposite direction. In terms of the Yotzer Harim, it also could be considered extraneous. Amalei, so his answer to him is, Danim divrei Torah mi divrei Torah. You can learn a Gzera Shava when the Gzera Shava includes words from the Torah on both sides. Vein danim divrei Torah mi divrei Kabbalah. Now then, we do not learn divrei Torah from divrei Kabbalah, which is the divrei ha-nevi'im. So the answer of the Gemara is interesting on a number of levels. One of which is it really true that we only learn Gzera Shavot from Torah to Torah and not Torah to Kabbalah to the nevi'im? As the Tosfot HaRosh points out, that's not always true. There are Gzera Shavot that include the Nevi'im. Some of them, maybe you can argue, are from Navi to Navi. Maybe that's okay. But we also find other types of Gzeret Shavot between that which is in the Torah and that which is in the Navi. The way that the Tosafot HaRosh reconciles that is to say that when you have a choice between a Gzeret Shava between Torah and Torah versus a Gzeret Shava of Torah to Kabbalah, then we would favor saying that it's a Gzeret Shava from Torah to Torah. But that's not to say that we'd exclude completely Gzer Shava from Torah to Kabbalah. The other thing is that in many of those instances where the Gemara does that, the Rishonim over there call it a Giloi Milta. They don't think that it's really a Gzer Shava. They just say that the Navi helps us to understand the meaning of the word. And that is because if you don't say that, then you have an issue, which the Gemara asks whenever the Gemara learns something from Yechezkel, which is, until Yechezkel came around, what did we do? What was the Torah Shebaal Peh? How did it exist without the Psukim for Yechezkel? So sometimes they say that it's a Mesorah mi Sinai, Halacha Lamosh mi Sinai, and then Asmachu Akra. And then the Navi came and wrote the Pasuk that then identifies that Torah Shebaal Peh now through a Pasuk in Navi. But in other instances, you would have to say that the Gemara is looking for a definition of a word, and it uses the Gzer Shava of the word to find it in usage in Divrei Kabbalah, and its usage in Divrei Kabbalah enlightens us as to the meaning of the word. And that's why sometimes you could have such a Gzer Shava from Divrei Torah to Divrei Kabbalah, which is that Divrei Torah are learning from the Divrei Kabbalah, not the exact Limudim, but the definition of the word, the definition of the term, or the Giloi Milta, as the Rishonim call it. That's how they deal with the fact that sometimes we do have such Gzer Shavot. The other thing is, why is it that we don't learn Divrei Torah mi Divrei Kabbalah? And that likely is because there is a qualitative difference between Divrei Torah and Divrei Kabbalah, both from the perspective of Torah Moshe versus the Nevi'im, as well as from the perspective of what was the purpose of Torah versus the Nevi'im. The Torah was given l'dorei dorot, was a eternal transmission that was given to us. On the other hand, Divrei Kabbalah, the Divrei Nevi'im, are given for their particular generation and that particular situation. Now, it's true that whatever's written down in Nevi'im was considered to be valuable to Dorot. Not all Nevu'ah was recorded in the Navi. The Nevu'ot that were only particular for that generation or that time period and had no relevance to time periods beyond that were not documented. The nevuot that were documented have long-ranging implications, but that's not to say that it's not qualitatively different than the Torah. The Torah, which is an eternal book and transmission, versus the Kabbalah, whose primary purpose of the nevuah when it was given was for a particular generation, a particular situation. It might have ramifications or might have value to other generations, but still wasn't given as an eternal type of book in that way. And that qualitative difference might explain the reason why we don't want to learn Divrei Torah mi Divrei Kabbalah. Now, that also raises the issue with regards to the Gemara's question. I just note this with the Harim and Ruach, whereby those entities, it's hard to understand what the Gemara was looking for, because in general, when we speak about Leida, the difference in Leida is between Zachar and Nekeva, not between whether it's an entity or not an entity. And by these items, there's no separation or differentiation between Zachar and Nekeva. So then how could you classify it as a Leida? And that question also seems to be a little strange, that the Gemara is just reaching to understand what's this idea of the Gzeret Shavot, because if you make Gzeret Shavot, which seemingly here are in the world of Gzeret Shavot that don't have a clear Mesorah to them, because we raise the issues of Meshivin, of logical underminings of those Gzeret Shavot. So once that's open, they're pointing out the folly, maybe, in making such Gzeret Shavot, which also include Harim Viruach. Then, if you follow through with the logic that you're using over here, maybe that's the nature of the Gemara's question with regards to those items. All right. Rabba Barachana, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Hainu time of the Rabbi Meir. Now we're offering an alternative view as to what the reasoning behind Rabbi Meir is in the Mishnah, as to why he says that discharges from the woman that look like a behemah, chaya, and oaf are considered to be a leida. So until now we saw the possibility of vayitzer, vayitzer. Now we have another possibility, which is the eyes, ve'nehelil, ve'nehem, domot shel adam. Their eyes are similar to the human eyes. And since they have that commonality between them, that's why he considers it to be a leida. Elameato, if that's the case, I'm appellate to mut nachash, to heimo, to me'ad leida. That means that if a woman discharges something that looks like a snake, it should also be tamei tumat leida, ho'il, v'galgal eino, agula shel veladam, because the eye is round like that of a human being. V'chit heima hachanami. If you want to say, okay, yeah, that you're right, that would be the conclusion from what we're saying here, litnei nachash. Then why isn't that included in the list of items in the Mishnah that Rabbi Meir says are subject to Tumat Leida? He only mentions Behema Chaya Va'op. He doesn't mention Nachash. He says, Itana Nachash. Had he only written Nachash, Hava Amina B'Nachashu D'Pligi Rabbanan Ale, the Rabbi Meir, we would have thought that that's the only instance where the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Meir. The Lo Tiv Be Yitzira. Because over there, there's no word of Yitzira. Aval Behema Chaya Lo Pligi D'Chtiv Be Yitzira. When it comes to Behema Chaya, where the word Yitzira does appear, maybe the Chachamim would agree to that position. So therefore, it wrote Behema Chaya Va'Op to tell you that even in the case of Behema Chaya Va'Op, the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Meir. Of course, they disagree by Nachash, but they also disagree by these other items as well. Vaha, Gabe Mumim, Tani Lo. Forget about a Nachash having an eye that's similar to a human being. Even animals don't have eyes that are similar to human beings. It's listed in the Mumim in Masechet Bechorot. That if you have et shigalgal eino agul shokel adam, if you have an animal whose eye is round like the eye of a human being, then it is considered to be a mum for bechor. It's considered to be a mum for korbanot, and it's a disqualifying feature for animals. So how can you tell me that animals have the same shape eye as the human being? I says lahalo kasho, that's not a problem. Ha beukma ha bitziria, it is the black versus the tziria. You have different interpretations as to what the word tziria means over here. You look in the Mesorah HaShas, he brings from the Oruch, that's perush adom asovev et hashachor. So the answer according to the Oruch is it's the difference between the pupil and the iris. Both in human beings and in animals, the pupil is round. And they share that in common, and that's what Rabbi Meir was referencing to. The Mishnah in Bechorot that disqualifies the animal for a mum is speaking, according to this, about the iris around the pupil, the color part of the eye that surrounds the pupil. That's different between human beings and animals. So that's one possible way to make the distinction. The way that Rashi makes the distinction, and Rashi explains similarly in Bechorot this way, is that Habitziria refers to the eye socket. And that is, in human beings, the size, shape of the socket is different than the socket shape in the animals. And obviously, it would be true by Nachash as well, that they have a different structure to their eye. They might have some black circle that looks like a pupil that's similar to a human being, but the remainder of the eye is not common between the Nachash and the human being. And so in that way, the Gemara says that you can distinguish between what's being said here, where there is common denominator between man and animal, and that's the pupil, and there are other areas where there isn't commonality, and that's why you look at an animal, you don't say, wow, that looks like a human eye. And so you have, then that's referencing either to the iris or to the eye socket, which would be shaped differently than that of a human being. Rabbi Yanai Amar, Hainu Taima de Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Yanai brings an alternative view as to what the reasoning behind Rabbi Meir is. Ho ve'enehem hochot lifnehem kishel adam. That animals, chayot, and technically ofot, have the same eye structure, which is the animals that are lower down in the complexities of creation have eyes on the side of their face, whereas animals and human beings have eyes in front of their face, and that is the common denominator between them, which is why Rabbi Meir says what he says. Where he asks, obviously, Varei Of, Deinav, Hochol Defanav. Birds, that's not true about. Birds have eyes on the side and do not have eyes in front of them. The Kamar Rabbi Meir, and yet Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah says that they're Tamei. He says, Behema Chayav Va'Of. So how could you say that that's the common denominator here that makes them Tamei Tumat Leida if by an oath the eyes are on the side and not in the front? Amar Abaye, Bekaria, Bekipufa. It's in the case of these two birds, which happens to be the translation of the birds that are mentioned in Parshat Shmini, that are non-kosher birds, in the posuk that says, Vetakos, Vetashalach, Vetayanshuf, which are named as non-kosher birds. The translation in Targum of the word kos and yanshuf is karya vekipofa. That would obviously be what the reference is to over here. The Baal Tosafot just point out that the word kipofa is used in different contexts in the Gemara to mean different things. And there are, it says, three different types of kipofa that the Gemara references to. But over here, we're obviously speaking about birds. And the birds that have eyes in front of them are owls. And so the description over here of Akaria and Kipofa seem to be species of owls, even though, again, if it's the translation of Kos and Yanshuf, in the modern day Hebrew, the Yanshuf is used to mean a black hawk, which obviously would not be what we're looking for over here. So it can't be that that's the meaning of Yanshuf in the Torah, based on what the Gemara is saying over here. And it would be more likely to be a species of owl, whereby the eyes are in front. So it's a nocturnal type of animal that has front-placed eyes. So you're telling me by other birds, Rabbi Meir doesn't think the discharge is a leida. It's only by these particular birds. Meitevek, is that really true? Rabbi Chanina ben, whether it's Antigonus or Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, Omer nirin divrei Rabbi Meir bibehema v'chaya. I think Rabbi Meir is right when it comes to animals. V'divrei chachamim bofot. I think the chachamim are right when it comes to birds. Myofot. What is it by birds that we're saying? Ilema v'karya v'kipofa. If you're speaking about the owls, Maishna Behema Bechaya Deinem Hokod Lifnehem Kishel Adam, it's distinct, or what's different then about animals, that you would say we think that Rabbi Meir is right by animals, because of the commonality between them, that their eyes are forward-facing. Karyavikipufa Nami, then these birds also have forward-facing eyes, so why would you say that you favor the Chachamim there versus Rabbi Meir? Ella, Pshita, Bishar Ofot, must be that we're speaking about other Ofot, which means all ofot, michlau. And from there you would conclude that the Rabbi Meir polig b'shar ofot. The Rabbi Meir argues by the other ofot. He says, I favor the position of the chachamim by ofot, and the ofot I'm speaking about are ofot besides owls. That shows you that he's saying that I favor the chachamim over Rabbi Meir, which means that Rabbi Meir's opinion is that even other ofot are subject to this din, not just the owls. Chasurei mechzera. It says, the Braita is missing some transition words here that will help us understand it. V'chachik tani, this is what it means. V'chanina ben Antigonus, or V'chanina ben Gamliel Omer, nirin divir Rabbi Meir v'beimah v'chaya. I think Rabbi Meir's position makes more sense by beimah and chaya. V'hu aden the karya v'kipofa. And that's true also by owls, because they all have forward-facing eyes. V'divir chachamim b'shar ofot. And I think the chachamim's position is correct by other birds. Not because Rabbi Meir argues on them, because Sha'af Rabbi Meir lo nechlaki mehem elu b'kari b'kipofa. because Rabbi Meir only argued on them with regards to species of owls. Of a basharofot modilu. By other species of birds, he agrees with the Chachamim that they're not considered to be a leidan. And that's why I favor the position of the Chachamim, not because it's only the position of the Chachamim, it's also Rabbi Meir's position. Or in essence, he's saying, I think Rabbi Meir is right. It turns out that he phrases it in the Chachamim's name with regards to other birds in order to indicate to us that there is a distinction between other birds and owls. But once he does that, that really is the sheet of Rabbi Meir through and through, and he really is poskening like Rabbi Meir all the way through. Where it says, V'atanyo, and this V'atanyo needs to be minichuta, is a proof to what we're saying. Amar Abelazib Rabbi Tzadok, Amar Pelet min be'ema v'chaya, the Dimi Rabbi Meir, Vlad. When if someone discharges a animal, then according to Rabbi Meir, that's a leida. Dimi Chachamim, eno Vlad. It's not the case. Ubo fot, tibadek. According to fot, you need to check. Aman tibadek. According to whom do you need to check? Lab the divrei Rabbi Meir. It must be according to Rabbi Meir. You need to check which type of bird was discharged. Damar karya v'kipofa in sharofot lo. Because he makes that distinction between the species of owls and other birds, and therefore you need to check. According to the Chachamim, it doesn't make any sense that you need to check, because the Chachamim say that behemot and chayot are not considered to be a leida. Certainly they believe that ofot are not considered to be a leida. Why do you need to check anything? So Amar Ravacha Breid Ravika, he rejects that and says, lo, tibadek to Rabbanan. Even according to Rabbanan, you have to do a check. Damrei karya v'kipofa in sharofot lo. That they think that karya v'kipofa are included in the din of leida, whereas other birds are not. Where it says, umayshna karya v'kipofa mi behema v'chaya. That doesn't make so much sense. You're telling me now that species of owls that are discharged by a woman are considered a leida, but a behema and a chaya, which we would think is a more complex entity, they're not considered to be a leida. Hoyo v'yeshlem listot ke'adam. Says Einochanami, that is the case. That is because owls have a unique feature that makes them common to human beings, and that is that their cheeks are similar to the cheeks of human beings. As opposed to other animals that do not have raised and protruding cheeks, the owl does have that, and therefore the owl has two things that are common to human beings. First of all, they have forward-facing eyes, but they also have cheeks that look like the cheeks of a human being. So given that, they're more likely to be considered a leida than a behema and a chaya. So by me name, Rabbi Yirmiyah mi Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Yirmiyah queried of Rabbi Zera the following item. Le Rabbi Meir. According to Rabbi Meir, damar behema b'meisha vlad ma'alyahu, he thinks that an animal in utero is considered to be a full-fledged vlad because he says if she gives birth to it, it has tumat leida. Kavol ba'avia kiddushin. What happens if her father accepts kiddushin on her behalf, meaning this in utero female? He accepts kiddushin on behalf of his quote unquote future daughter, mahu. What's the din? The Gemara says the ma'inaf gemino. What does it matter whether he accepted kiddushin or not? The itzurei ba'achotah. That is to make him a sur to marry her sister. So if he's married to her, then he's not allowed to be married to her sister. The Gemara says the memra dechaye. From that you would conclude that this form that the woman has internally is a viable entity because, as Rashi notes over here, the din of isra chot isha is only true b'chayeha, while she's alive. One may not marry two sisters while the first sister that he married is alive. But if that sister passes away, then he does have the right to marry a sister. So it's only while she's alive that it's a problem. So you're telling me that this question revolves around whether he can marry the sister. That means you think that whatever is being born here is going to be a viable entity, that this will remain a question. Meir only says the reason that these items are considered to be tamei tumat leida is because in their genus, there are those that live. And not necessarily when they're born to a human being. When they're born to whatever species they are, then they survive. So since this is a viable entity in its species, then even though when it's born to a human being, it's not viable, nevertheless, we do consider it like a leida. So if that's the case, then the whole reason is because it's not going to survive. It's because it has quote-unquote relatives that do survive, and because they do, then this is considered to be a leida. So, Amar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, Ad Kan Evil Rabbi Yirmiyah the Rabbi Zera, Lidei Gigoch Velo Gachich, that he was trying to make him laugh, and he didn't laugh. And over here, the Masoret HaShas points out that the Targum Yonatan on the word Tzachaka Tzara, which is this week's Parsha, that Tzachaka Tzara, the translation is Gachacha Tzara, that she laughed. And what was happening here was Rabbi Yirmiyah was trying to get Rabbi Zera to laugh. As Rashi notes over here, that Rabbi Zera was an individual who was very serious, and he didn't like laughing, because of the Gemara that we find in Brachot, which is, Asur la'adam shimaleis piv skok bo'olam hazeh, that a person in this world can't make himself so joyous, celebratory, and maybe even a little bit frivolous to laugh in this world, because this world isn't the place to be laughing. Laughing is for the olam haba, or the Gemara in Avodah Zarah speaks about a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't laugh bo'olam hazeh, ela by the case of the destruction of the Rishaim, ela on that one day, that he does laugh. So Rabbi Zera felt that it was inappropriate to be a little frivolous, to joke around or to laugh. And Rabbi Yirmiyah felt that Rabbi Zera was way too serious, that he took this to its extreme. It's not true that when it comes to Divrei Torah, when it comes to certain things, you can enjoy yourself, you can have a little bit of a laugh. You don't have to be so serious that you don't laugh at all. So Rabbi Yirmiyah tried to get Rabbi Zera to crack up, to laugh. So he brought this whole question down in order to get him to laugh. Basically, it was Purim Torah, and he was trying to get Rabbi Zera to laugh at the Purim Torah, and it didn't work. And that's what Gemara concludes. Now, it's not clear from the Gemara if the entirety of the sequence they're saying this about, or only the end of the sequence they're saying this about, but it seemingly goes back on the entire sequence here, which is even the basis for his question. In fact, that she is considered to be entity that, if given birth to, would have impact over here on halachot. That whole concept is just a fabrication in order to make Rabbi Zera laugh. On the other hand, if you look in the Rishonim over here, they seem to still take it pretty seriously. First of all, the Tosafot over here says, Litzurei Bachota. He says, what about Linyan Gufalo Bai? Why is he only asked the question about her sister? That the possibility that her sister is Asura. What about her herself? Why isn't she Asura? Either because she's an Eish HaDish, the father took Kiddushin for her, she's an Eish HaDish, so somebody who sleeps with her would be in violation of adultery, or if someone kills her, that they're Chayav for killing a entity that is a live being. So why aren't those relevant over here? Even though, again, the entity that's being discharged by the woman is something that does not look like a human being, nevertheless, we're saying here, by regards to marriage and Achuta, we consider it to be a sister. Then why don't we have all sorts of halachot that have application, not just to a sister, but to her herself? The Baal Tosafot say that's because the Pshita Lei, the Gemara was clear that Eina Chaya Gimel Shanim, that this entity would not last 3 years, and even Shana Achat, it wouldn't last. So that eliminates a number of factors here. Number one is that if she doesn't make it to 3 years, then she's not Re'uya the Biya. So any question with regards to her herself is not going to be relevant in the world of Arayot, because she never reaches the age by which Arayot become problematic. So that's number one. Number two is, he says, it's pretty clear that it's not going to even make it a year. And that's why it's considered to be a Trefa, because it's not going to make it past its first year of life. And if it's a Trefa, once again, then things like Hariga and so on are not really issues, because a Trefa, one is not subject to a death penalty or considered to be a rotzeach when they kill a treifa. And so all of those halachic issues are eliminated because the entity itself is not going to make it that far. Now, the Tosafot then leaves it as an open point, which is, well, maybe there are problems. For instance, a roveya is chayav skila, like someone who performs bestiality is chayav nita for that. Then maybe this should also be, even if they don't reach the level of age where rayot are relevant, nevertheless, it could just be like a behema where Ruveya is a problem, and Tosafot leaves that as an unresolved issue over here. But what you see from this is that Tosafot is taking very seriously this idea that if you have a Gzera Shava that says that an entity in utero is considered to be similar to Adam, then we start to take that very seriously and ask questions as to whether the halachot surrounding this entity do have a din like Adam. Now, Tosafot is saying this in the Havamina of the Gemara. Whether he says that in the Maskana is unclear. The Tosafot HaRosh also over here asks similar questions to the Baal HaTosafot, and he concludes at the end. He says, "The milta tepshitu kaven de imot mea leida tamei kmo nefil." He says that just like the mother is tamei tumat leida, that means that whatever is being discharged from here is classified as a nafel. Now, if it's classified as a nafel, that means that there's tumat ohel. A nafel that is born, that entity, if it is far enough along in its development, is considered to be a leida. And that leida, as we saw earlier, makes it that there is a human that has been niftar, and then there's tumat ohel from that discharge. Well, if you think that this is considered to be a leida in terms of what is in utero, then the Tosfot HaRosh says, without hesitation, then that means that this is considered to be a nafel. And if the woman discharged such an item, it would make it tamei tumat ohel. So you see that Tosfot HaRosh takes it very seriously, that this idea that once you have the gzeirah shavah of vayitzer for Rabbi Meir, and we classify whatever it is that's in utero to be like a human being, that's all the way. That's 100%. Not just for the fact that it's a leida, but even for the perspectives or the aspects that deal with other dinim of human beings, like what the Bali Tosvora is asking about, or like what the Gemara is asking about, or in the case of Tumat Ohel, and it seems to be that he believes, the Tosfot HaRosh, that Rabbi Meir would believe these entities have a din of Tumat Ohel, even though they're animals, or they have the form of Behema Chayav Of, which otherwise would not have such a din if it was not coming from a human being. Just interesting dynamic over here as to how seriously we take the Gemara. When the Gemara says that it was all a fabrication, how far back in this sequence do we say it's a fabrication? The Tosfot HaRosh says, well, yeah, you mean the questions at the end about Al-Khuto or whatever are not so important, or they were just a joke. But with regards to the concept, it still exists. That this entity is considered to be a human being. As the Bayit Tosafot only say it in the Havamina, they might say the same thing, or they might be actually saying that that's the Havamina, but in the Maskona, we would not say such a thing, or go as far as to say that we maintain this idea that if it's Damei Tumat Leida, that it also has the din of a human being. Okay, Gufa, the Gemara goes back to discuss this memra of Amar Yehuda Marav. Lo Amar Rabbi Meir, El Ho B'Mino Mitkayim. The Rabbi Meir only states his position with regards to these items because in other contexts, these species do survive. Amar Rabbi Yirmi Difti, Ana Namitanina. We also have a Tanaic work backs up what Rabbi Yehuda Marav is saying in the qualification of Rabbi Meir's position. And that is with regards to a Mishnah in Bichorot, which is Amapelet min Chaya, min Behema Chaya Ba'of, woman who discharges something that looks like an animal or a bird. What we have in our Gemara is Vlad Ma'al Yehu, it's considered to be an entity or a real birth. The truth is that the Mishnah that we're quoting is quoted in a context of Bechor LeKohen and Bechor LeNachala. And over here, this section of the Mishnah is describing items that are Bechor LeKohen, but not Bechor LeNachala. And so Rabbi Meir over here says that these items, Mepelet Min Behema Chai Ba'of, are all Bechor LeKohen, even though they're not Bechor LeNachala, Divi Rabbi Meir. V'chachamim omim, Ajebo Mitzurat Adam. That all has to have a human form to it. V'mepelet Sandal, O Shalya, O Shafir Merukam, Yotzei Mechutach, any type of discharge that comes out. For instance, a sandal, as Rashi says over here, it's an entity or a fetus which was crushed, flattened internally. Rashi claims that it has to do with twins, and one of the twins smushed or flattened out the other twin that was in there. O Shalya, or a placenta, O Shafir, or a fetal sac, Merukam, that has some shape or form to it, or a tzemechutach, or a baby that comes out limb by limb, cut up, a bachara b'chor l'nachala. Any entity that comes afterwards is going to be a b'chor l'nachala. Beinu b'chor l'kohen, but they will not be a b'chor l'kohen. The difference being is that the b'chora by kohen is determined by peterechem, the first thing to exit through the birth canal. And so over here you have entities that are coming out through the birth canal. Even though they're not viable entities, they're still considered to be peter rechem. They're the first thing coming through the rechem. And since they're the first one to discharge through the womb, then they are considered, quote unquote, to be the bechor l'kohen, but they're not a bechor l'kohen because they weren't a viable entity. So they are not a bechor. And whatever comes after them is also not a bechor because they don't have peter rechem. And we spent time on this in the Gemara Bechorot, discussing that you need both features. You need to be both peter rechem as well as to be a viable entity in order to be considered a bechor. That's why over here, the next birth will not be a Bechor LeKohen. On the other hand, the determination for Nachala is Reshit Ono. The first fruits, the first production of the father is considered to be the Bechor Lenachala. Now, as the Gemara Darshins on Reshito know, Mi She Lev Aviv Davar Alav, an entity which the father's heart is drawn after, or he would mourn over. And that means that there has to be some sort of attachment that develops between the father and the entity that's born. Now, while in utero, the father has some connection to the entity, but it's not a real connection or relationship in the sense that he will mourn it like as if he had lost the child. And it's especially, again, in a time period where the infant deaths were very high and the miscarriages were also very high. So a person would have become attached to something that's in utero. Only after the entity is born and has viability to it, that's where the father starts to build a relationship with it. And then if that entity passes away, the father will be devastated by it. And so the qualification for a Bechor Lenachala is Reshito No. And over here, that is absent because all these items that are being discharged were never viable entities with which the father could create a relationship that would make him mourn over the loss. And that is what the Gemara explains over here. So Bachra Bechor Lenachala and Bechor LeKohen. So the Chachamim believe that Behema Chayin Uf don't make this qualification of being Peter Rechem to make a subsequent birth not to be a Bechor LeKohen. Elim Kane, it has Mitzurat Adam. It has to have some human form to it. Now, the following items all may not have a human form exactly, but either these items are either indication of a human form, because like we said before, in Shilya below Vlad, or they have a human form that has somehow been deformed, which is that they have shaping of a human, but they've been pressed down, flattened, they have their Ivarim are coming out piecemeal, whatever it is, that already has a din of Petarechem, because that has the concept of Tzurat Adam, and therefore it's considered to be a Leidah, that makes it that whatever entity is born afterwards will not be a Bechor LeKohen. The Isakdata the Chaye, if you think that these entities are viable and can survive, Bachara Bechor LeNachala Mihavi, then why is the entity that's born afterwards considered to be Bechor LeNachala? Because if the first entity could live, then you'd have the qualification that he is the Bechor LeNachala, and then why would the next entity that's born be considered the Bechor LeNachala? So it must be like what Rabbi Yehuda Merav said, that over here, the reason Rabbi Meir says these entities are considered to be a Leida is not because they survive or not because they're viable, but because within their min, there are viable entities. But over here, they're not a viable entity. They're not going to survive. They're not going to live. Amarova, you don't have to say that. Olam Techai, it's possible that these entities would survive or they would be viable for some time. But nevertheless, they're not considered to be Bechor LeNachala, but Shani Hotam, Damakra, Reshit Ono. Again, they quote the source for Bechor LeNachala in Parsha Kitetse, which is Reshit Ono, Mishili Bo Davelav, an entity which the father's heart is drawn after, Yatzazeh Shein Libo Davelav. Excluded from this is an entity that a father would not be Mitabelalav. That's what's considered important in Nachala. Even if this entity survives over here, it's such an oddity, and it's not something that the father would be drawn to make a develop a relationship with because it's such an oddity and it's not going to survive. And we know that from the outset it's not going to survive. So even though if it does live for a period of time, the father doesn't form that relationship to the point where they would be libo davelav, and that's why it's not considered to be a Bechor LeNachala, even though it might survive after the Leida. So you can't prove from this Mishnah that Rabbi Meir's position is exactly like a Yehuda Merav. Doesn't mean they're wrong, Rabbi Yehuda Merav. This means that you can't prove from the Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda Merav's qualification of Rabbi Meir is necessarily correct from this Mishnah. So Rav Adar Bar Ava posed the following question to Abaye. Live Rabbi Meir, according to Rabbi Meir, Damar Behema Beisha Vlad Ma'alyu, an animal in utero of a woman is considered to be a fetus that will garner a din of Leida. Adam Bimei Behema Amai. What about the reverse? What about a human being that is inside of an animal? Where it says, the mai, nafkamina. What is the nafkamina? Why does it matter that the entity inside of the animal looks like a human being or looks like an animal? Lishteruei ba'achila. To be matirei ba'achila, a ben pakua, case where you shech the animal and inside of it is an entity that looks like a human being, does that entity then get the shechita of the animal to be matirit? And then you can eat it because it's considered to be a part and parcel of the animal. Or do we look at a human shape as being something that's a foreign object inside the Behema, and therefore when you shuff the Behema, it's not Matir, the human being. Now, according to Rashi, the question is only on Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir believes, like, just like where you have an individual that gives birth to an entity that's not human-like, it's behemoth-like, it's still classified as being a birth, so too you can say the same thing in the opposite, which is that an animal giving birth to a human-like entity will also be considered to be a fetus that belongs to the mother, or in essence, the shape or form of the entity that is being born doesn't matter, just matters whether the mother is a human being or the mother is an animal. If that's the case, then the question is really directed at Rabbi Meir, which is, if you have this situation with the human being inside of the animal, does the human being now treat it like the mother? If that's the case, then it should be mutar ba'achila. Whereas according to the Chachamim, who see that every entity has to be judged for what it looks like, then in this case, if the entity looks like a human being inside of the animal, there's no way that you'd be matirat al yedei the shechita of the mother. The Balei HaTosafot disagree and say that, yes, the question is according to Rabbi Meir, but that's because, according to Rabbi Meir, who says that something can be classified as a human entity so easily, even a behemah can be classified as a human entity, so too, inside of a behemah, maybe whatever is found there that looks like a human being would also be treated like a human entity. But for the Chachamim, who say that a animal that's found inside of a human being is definitely not classified as a fetus or a vlad for leida, then by behemah, they also think that whatever entity is found inside the behemah is like a behemah and not like a human being. And therefore, according to them, it's not even a question that it's muteret ba'achila. So according to Rashi, the questions are Rabbi Meir, but according to the Chachamim, it's clear that it's a surah ba'achila. As for Tosafot, the questions are according to Rabbi Meir, but it is obvious that according to the Chachamim, it is muteret ba'achila. I said, why doesn't he answer? Why can't we conclude the answer to this question from that member of Rabbi Yochanan? Dam Rabbi Yochanan, shochetet ha'behemah u'matzah ba dmut yonah. If a person checks an animal and then finds in utero something that has the shape or form of a dove, asura b'achila, that's problematic in terms of eating it because it's not the animal itself that's being reproduced inside of the animal. It's a foreign object, even though, again, it's its own entity. It was created through itself, but nevertheless, it's a foreign shape or entity, and that is not nitar ayedei the shechita of the mother. It says, achiyashto. How do you compare these cases? Hatam lo parsotikta velo parsaika. There, by a bird, it doesn't have split hooves, and it also doesn't have a heel. Hacha nehi de parsot leka parsamiika. A human being, they may not have two heels and a split hoof, but they do have one heel, they do have a parsa. That makes it that the human being is much more similar in shape and form to the animal than a bird is. And that is because even Rabbi Shimon, who says that if you have a rounded hoof animal that is born to a split-hoofed animal, that that animal is not kshera, and you can't eat it. Nevertheless, Rabbi Shimon believes that if you shech the mother and you find such an entity in utero, then you are allowed to eat it. So even Rabbi Shimon, who says that an animal that gives birth to a animal that is not split-hoofed, then you can't shech the offspring, and the offspring is not kasher. Nevertheless, he agrees that when it's in utero, that's not a reason to disqualify it, and it would be mutar b'shechitat imo. And so over here too, the human being, which has a parsa, or the equivalent of what would be a non-split-hoofed animal, so there we would say it to be an entity that could be nitar yedei shechita of the mother. Ofot, they don't have a split hoof, they don't even have a heel at all. And therefore, they're not even close to being in the world of behemah, and that's why if you find it internally, even after the shechita of the mother, it would not be kasher. And therefore, maybe there's a possibility, if you shech the mother, that this human-like entity that's inside of the animal would be mutar b'achila. The Gemara leaves the question as unresolved. Chachamim say in our Mishnah, kol shein bo mitzurat adam ein uvlad. Anything that doesn't have a human-like shape or form to it is not considered to be a vlad. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah by Rabbi Abba Marav. Hakol modim, everybody agrees, kufo tayish, its body is like that of a goat, upanav adam, and the face has features like a human being, Adam. It's classified as a human being in terms of Leida and the entity that is found inside of this woman. Gufo Adam, on the other hand, if the body is a human form, Upanav Taish, but the face looks like a goat, Velo Kulum, that's nothing. That's not considered to be an entity at all, or it's not considered to be a Leida, or it doesn't have Surat Adam, as the Chachamim say. Lo Nechelku, the machlok between Rav Meir and the Chachamim is in the following instance. Elosh Panav Adam, v'nivra v'ayin achat k'beima. Its facial features are like that of a human being, but one of the eyes looks like that of an animal. For instance, in a case where you have a body like a taish and the face is human-like, we said before that everybody agrees if the face is human-like, then it's classified like a leida or human entity. Over here, we're talking about saying the same thing. It's a body maybe of a taish, a face of a human being, but one of the features, one of the limbs of that face looks like an animal and not like a human being. What's the din there? Rabbi Meir Omer Mitzurat Adam. Rabbi Meir says, as long as it has Surat Adam, meaning that it has some sort of form like a human being, that's enough. So over here too, it would be sufficient that the Mitzurat Adam, that it has some Surat Adam, that to make it into an entity that is considered to be a Leida, as Chachamim Omim, call Surat Adam. It has to have its entirety be a shape or form of an Adam. So that's why the Chachamim would say that it's not an entity, because one of the features is like a Behema, and therefore it's not called Surat Adam. Whereas Rabbi Meir says that any Surat Adam is sufficient to make it into something that's classified as a Leida. At least according to Rashi, the Bali HaTosafot seem to quote Rashi's Shita as being, and this is similar to the Shita of the Ramban and the Rashbah, that even according to Rabbi Meir, you need at least Chatziah Partzuf, you need half of the face. Be like Surat Adam, and it's not sufficient just to have one item that is similar to an Adam. And this additional machlok between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir is, as Tosafot said, meduyak out of our Mishnah, because of the fact that the Chachamim use a phraseology which is kol shemitzurat Adam, and the Chachamim don't just say en ovlad. They don't just argue on Rabbi Meir. They give a reason for their position. So that opens up the possibility that there's another issue that they're arguing about. And that's what Rav is proposing, the machloket is. Amru lo, Birmi Rava, they said to Rabbi Rava, who brought this memra in the name of Rav, by Chatanya, don't we have a brayta that says just the opposite? The Rabbi Meir Omer called Surat, that he says you need to have what seemingly, in the way that the Gemara is written, means Rabbi Meir believes you need called Surat Adam, you need something to have entirely the features of an Adam, but Chachamim Omer means Surat Adam, that you only have to have some of the facial features be like that of an Adam. So how could Rav be saying what he's saying if a Braita says the opposite? So Amar Lahu, he responded to them, Itanya Tanya. If it is a Braita, it is a Braita. And the way Rashi says over here, I have a Mesorah for Rav, and I'm certain about what I'm saying, and I'm going to follow that Mesorah from Rav. You who don't have that Mesorah for Rav, but you do have a Braita, then you should default to the Braita and follow the prescription of the Braita, not like what Rav said. So the simplest way to explain the Gemara over here is the fact that the Braita flips the positions of Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. And the Bali HaTosafot favor such a reading of the Gemara, especially since we're going to see that Rabbi Yochanan in a second is going to have a position here. And the problem with that is, if you don't read the Braita in the way we just did in the simplest form, then Rabbi Yochanan would also be arguing on the Braita and not just Rav. And the Bali HaTosafot point out that's difficult. Rav can argue on the Braita because Rav Tanu Upoliku. Rav sometimes is given the status of a Tana, especially in the face of a Braita, and therefore Rav could have a differentiated opinion from a Braita. On the other hand, nobody believes that Rabbi Yochanan has a din like a Tana, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan has to reconcile with the Braita. So if we read the Braita like we just did, then it would make sense that Rabbi Yochanan's holding like the Braita, and he's arguing on Rav, but then he's not up against a Braita. The problem with the explanation being simply what we're saying is that the Braita is flipping their positions, is that if you look in the Mishnah, it's pretty clear that Rabbi Meir is the quote-unquote Mekel, and the Chachamim are the Machmirim. Rabbi Meir allows many more items or entities to be classified as a Leida, but the Chachamim narrow the scope of items that are considered to be a Leida. If that's the case, then Rabbi Meir is the Kula, the Chachamim are the Chumra. When you go to the Braita, all of a sudden you have their positions flipped. And that means that the Braita doesn't really reconcile with our Mishnah. The Braita is saying now that Rabbi Meir believes that you have to have all human features in order to be considered a Leida. But the Chachamim say you need some human features. That means that Rabbi Meir has a higher threshold in order to be classified as a Leida in the number of human features that you have, despite the fact that he says that a Behema Chayin Ofer is considered to be a Leida. So even though Rabbi Meir thinks a total animal is considered to be a Leida, over here now he's going to say that you need a Surat Adam that's called Surat Adam. Now the Tosafot points that out, even in the case where before, according to Rav, Rabbi Meir only required a portion of it to be like Surat Adam, he says, well, if a total Behema can be classified as a Leida, over here, why do you need partial Surat Adam to be classified as a Leida? The Tosafot says over here, "Ba'afagav the Rebbe Meir kilo dami klal le'adam tamei'a le'da ki dami le'adam." When it's already similar to a human being, "Vayshe domelo b'miktzat kol yitzira." That point, you needed to have at least a significant amount of it to look like a human being. And that's what Rav is proposing, the machloket is. But Rav's position at least aligns consistently with the Mishnah, which is Rabbi Meir is going to have more entities that are considered to be a leida. So the Chachamim are going to have a higher threshold, and they will have less entities. But once you reach the Braita and the simple reading of the Gemara, the Braita says that the Chachamim actually have a lower standard, and they'll have more leidot that are considered to be a leida than that which Rabbi Meir proposes. That bothered Rashi, and therefore Rashi, in explaining the Braita, actually changes the meaning of Kol Tzurat Adam and Mitzurat Adam. Rashi says the following, the Rabbi Meir Hachi Kamar, Kol Shehu Tzurat Adam. When it says Kol Shehu Tzurat Adam, it doesn't mean it has to have all human features. It means anything that has a human feature, anything that has Mitzurat Adam, anything that has a human feature to it, will be considered a Vlad. Even if its face is like a taish, elish nivra ba'ein achat u'blessed achat u'dumel adam, any single feature that is human-like. So it's not even like Rav's statement, which is Rav's statement is that you have to have at least a significant portion of the entity have a human-like face. And if one thing is not human-like, there Rabbi Meir still says it's a leida. According to the view of the Braita, he says, call surat adam, any human feature. Any single human feature that's found in this entity, that's enough to make it into Tamei Tumat Leida. On the other hand, the Chachamim say that it has to have Mitzurat Adam. And the way that Rashi explains that is, Ad She'ebo Miktzat Tzura Hanikeret, until it has some part of it that has a clear definition to it, like half the face, that is considered to be a human-like qualities. So Rashi maintains this distinction between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir by saying the Chachamim, even in the Braita, are more Chamor, or have a higher threshold than Rabbi Meir. But then he explains the meaning of the words differently. That Rabbi Meir, when he says kol tzurat adam, means anything that tzurat adam. Now that disagrees with Rav. Rav says in his situation that you need at least half the face to be human-like in nature, whereas Rabbi Meir in the Braita says any feature, one eye or anything like that is human-like, that's a leida. Whereas the Chachamim in the Braita say kol mitzurat adam means that at least you have to have something that is human-like, but it has to be something significant, like half a face. That's considered to be Tzurat Adam, as opposed to Rav's view, which is the Chachamim require the entire thing be have human-like qualities, or the entire face of human-like qualities, in order for it to be considered a Vlad Ma'alyo. So Rashi, in doing such, then maintains this distinction that the Chachamim have a higher threshold, or are less likely to have a Leida here, by doing that. The difficulty with Rashi's explanation, as the Baal Tosafot will point out, is that Rashi, in one line of the Gemara to the next line of the Gemara, is changing the meaning of what the Kol Tzurat Adam means. In the case of Rav, he's saying Kol Tzurat Adam means the entirety of the entity. And then in Rabbi Meir's statement in the Braita, he's saying Kol Tzurat Adam means any one feature. So they're giving it the exact opposite meaning, one line apart in the Gemara. And that seems to be inconsistent in terms of the usage of the terminology. You would expect it to have the same definition within the context of a very short part of the Gemara. And that's why the Baal Tosafot don't like that view. So just know that there's a third view here, which is the Rabbeinu Hananel's view, which he has the positions of Rav and the Braita reversed, which is, it's exactly like we have it, it's just that Rav's saying what's in the Braita, and the Braita is saying what Rav is saying. That solves part of the problem, at least for Rabbi Yochanan, because then Rav's position aligns with what we have in our Mishnah, and the Braita has just the opposite. But then, if Rabbi Yochanan agrees with Rav, then he's not necessarily arguing on the Braita, because Rav's position is embedded in our Mishnah. And therefore, he can use the Mishnah as his basis for arguing on the Braita, and then we won't have that problem with Rabbi Yochanan. So those are three different ways to read this Gemara. I'm Rabbi Yochanan, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Metzach v'agvinim v'enayim v'listot v'gabot zakan ad kulam ke'echad. That when it comes to the forehead, the eyebrows, the eyes, the cheeks, and the chin of the individual, all of them have to be of a similar nature. And according to Rashi, he's saying this in the Shita of the Rabbonon of Rav, whereby the Rabbonon of Rav say that you need Kol Tzurat Adam, you need it to be entirely like an Adam. And what Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Abba is adding for us in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that we don't have from Rav is that these are the features that need to be human-like. And absent from this list over here are the ears. As Rashi points out, that's what Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Abba is saying, that when you say Kol Tzurat Adam, Kol Tzurat Adam means all these features that I'm listing over here, they all have to have human-like qualities. And again, Rabbi Yochanan then is following the Rabbonon of Rav. And as Rashi says over here, Rav Tanahu Polik. And therefore, Rav can disagree with the Braita that we brought that says the opposite. And Rabbi Yochanan is subscribing to Rav's position, which again, the Baitos well don't love, because Rabbi Yochanan doesn't have a right to argue on a Braita, even though Rav can argue on a Braita. Rashi will answer that Rabbi Yochanan is following Rav. And since he's following Rav, and Rav is Tanahu Polik, then the answer, he does have the ability to argue on the Braita, because he's following Rav's position. Who can argue on the Braita? Rav Amar Chasa. Rava says in the name of Chasa, Metzach, Ve'agavein, Ve'ayin, Ve'leset, Ve'gabat, Hazakan, Ajiu Kulam Gachat. He mentions all these features in the singular, which is the forehead, the eyebrow, the eye, the cheek, and the part of the chin, half of the chin, Ajiu Kulam Gachat. So it means that half of the facial features need to be human-like. Not all of the facial features need to be human-like. And according to Rashi, this view of Rav Amar Chasa is following the position of the Rabbonon in the Braita. And that is because, according to Rashi, the explanation of the Rabbonon in the Braita is that they require that half the face be human-like qualities. And that's what the Gemara answers here, Velo Plige. They don't argue. Hakamad Amar Kol Tzurat, Hakamad Amar Mitzurat. Like Rashi says, one of them, meaning that Rabbi Yochanan is saying like the Chachamim of Rav, who says, Kol Tzurat Adam, you need to have all the facial features be human-like. And Rava is following the Rabbonon that's brought in the Braita that say that you need at least half the face to have human-like qualities, but not the entire face to have human-like qualities. So the truth is, they do argue. Both think that they are saying their Shita and the Shita of the Rabbonon. They differ in which Rabbonon they are following. Is it the Rabbonon of Rav or the Rabbonon of the Braita, according to Rashi? Now, according to Tosafot, where the Braita flips entirely the position of the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir, then you would have to say that they don't argue, because according to Tosafot, they're both following the position of the Braita. They're just arguing whether they're following the position of the Rabbanan or Rabbi Meir. According to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that as the Kol Mitzurat Adam, he's following Rabbi Meir of the Braita, whereas Rav Amar Chasa, who says you only need a portion of it or half of it to be human-like in qualities, he's following the Chachamim of the Braita that say Mitzurat Adam, that a portion of it needs to be human-like in qualities. And it's just the opposite of Rav's position. And that's how you could explain their difference of opinion. It derives from their machloket as to whether halacha is like Rabbi Meir or the Chachamim in the Braita. Meitavei, Tzurat Panim, Shamru, Afilu Partzuf Echad Min HaPartzufim. So when a person, they're speaking about the Tzurat Panim, has to be like human-like, that's even one Partzuf out of the partsufim. So Rashi says over here, that means ever echad, any one of the limbs or parts of the face needs to have human-like qualities, with the exception of the ears, which won't make a difference, even if it has human-like qualities. Mememra, the bechad namisagi. So from there, it sounds like only one feature being human-like in nature, that's enough. Now the truth is, of course, this is one of the questions the Baal Tosafot asked on Rashi. According to Rashi, we have an opinion like that in the Braita. According to him, that's the view of Rabbi Meir in the Braita. So why is the Gemara so perplexed or bothered by this statement? It's following Rabbi Meir of the Braita. According to the Baal Tosafot, such a position doesn't exist, because the Braita is just the opposite of Rav's position, whereby Rav thinks that the Chachamim require total human qualities of the face, and Rabbi Meir thinks a half. So when you flip it in the Braita, you still have only those two opinions. There's no new opinion. And so that's why the Gemara is searching for, is there such an opinion? According to Rashi, there is an opinion already. Why is the Gemara even searching? This is Rabbi Meir of the Braita, and they should have said that. So Rashi explains the question as being only on Amar Rava, Amar Chasa, and that is because, according to Rashi, their position follows the Chachamim of the Braita. And in the Chachamim of the Braita, the Mitzurat Adam means at least half of the face needs to have features of an Adam. But the Chachamim of the Braita say their positioning within the word of Mitzurat Hadam. As long as it has at least half, then that is sufficient to make it into a Leida. Whereas over here in the Tosefta, our assumption now is that this is following the Mandamar that says Mitzurat Hadam. And that Mitzurat Hadam, the definition of which is that you only need one feature. So that makes it sound like Mitzurat is not a half a face, but only one feature. And that fits the explanation of Rabbi Yirmiyah, the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that Mitzurat was Rabbi Meir's position, and that it means one item, and that's it. Then Rabbi Meir can be the author of the Braita. But for Amar Rava Amar Chaso, who says the word Mitzurat is describing the Chachamim's position, then if we think this is according to one who says Mitzurat, then according to the Chachamim, you need a minimum of half the features to be like human-like, and this bright is only requiring one. So how do you reconcile between the two of them? Gemara says, Amar Abaye Kitanya Ayi. That Braita is Lakev Tanya. It's telling you what would cause a problem. I mean, it is the negative formulation over here, which is the Chachamim who believe that you need Kol Tzurat Adam, then even a single feature not being human-like in nature would be Makev. And that's what it's saying here. Any one feature that is not like the human being, except for the ears, would be considered to be a problem for the Chachamim, according to Rav, or the Rebbe Meir, and the Breit, according to Tosafot, that any single feature that's not human-like would be problematic. But what you learn from here is, the Chiddush of Rabbi Yirmiyahu Abba is the fact that the features that he mentions are anything besides the ears. And the ears are not a consideration over here, it's only the facial features that matter. Those facial features, if any one of them is not human-like, then it would be disqualified. And it follows the position of the one who says that all the features of the face have to be human-like in qualities. Some say that it is, according to one who says mitzurat, that you don't need all the features, only some of the features. So what does it mean that one? It means one of each of the features needs to be that way, or half the face. And that's the way that we explained mitzurat adam, according to at least Rashi in Rav's position of Rabbi Meir, or even the Chachamim's position in the Braita. Amar Rava, Nivra b'ayin echad, if the entity is born with a single eye, ubiyerech echad, or a single leg, min atzad, if it's in the normal place where the leg would be, then imo tmeah, then the mother is tmeah tumat leida. Be'emtza, if that single leg or single eye is in the middle, not where you would expect one of the two eyes or one of the two legs to be, then Torah, because that's not considered to be a human form or entity. Amar Rava, Veshto Nakuv, if the esophagus is punctured, Imot Meya, that even though that is a trefa, nevertheless, it is an entity that is considered to be human-like and would survive, because he believes that a trefa can, chayo, can live, and therefore it's considered to be a birth that is Tmeya. Veshto Atom, on the other hand, if the esophagus is plugged up and it can't be utilized at all, then Imot Torah, because this is not just a trefa, this is a problem that is life-threatening, and the entity won't be able to survive, and therefore it's not considered to be a leida. Tarabanan, hamapelet guf atum, a woman who gives birth to a body that is closed up, sealed up. Satum there means it's not the shape or form. It's lacking shape or form, so it's missing that entire aver. Eini mot mea leida, bezu guf atum. What's considered to be a sealed up or closed in entity? Rabbi Omer Kadeshini Hatelman Achad Yamut, any part of the body which, if you removed it from someone who was alive, they would not survive, then if that is clogged up or plugged up, missing from the individual, then it'd be problematic. How much you have to take away from an individual that's alive and they die? Rabbi Zaki Omer Adhar Kova, until the knee. Rabbi Yanai Omer Adhani Kavav, until the waist of the individual. Until the belly or the midriff of the individual. Ben Rabbi Zakkai, the Rabbi Nanai, Ike Benayu. The difference between Rabbi Yanai and Rabbi Zakkai's positions are whether trefa chaya or not. Mar Sabar trefa chaya, or Mar Sabar trefa ain't chaya. Rabbi Zakkai believes that a trefa does not survive, whereas Rabbi Yanai believes a trefa does survive. Rabbi Zakkai, who says only until the arkova, is because above the arkova it's already a trefa. And according to him, a trefa is eno chaya, and that's why taking off something of that amount wouldn't leave them not able to live, and therefore if it's a tomb, it's problematic. Rabbi Yanai, on the other hand, says all the way up to the waist, because he believes that a trefa can survive, similar to what we saw from Rava, where Veshto Nakuv can survive, even though it's a trefa, because trefa chaya, so too he thinks that if it's cut up to the waist, trefa chaya, and that's why if it's cut off up to that point, it's still considered to be a viable entity. Then Rabbi Yanai, the Rabbi Yochanan, between Rabbi Yanai and Rabbi Yochanan, Ikmanai with Rabbi Elazar. Damar Rabbi Elazar, we saw this in Chulin. The Rabbi Elazar says, Nitala Yerech Chalal Shala, if you take off the entire leg and the hip joint to the point where when it's bent down or the animal is crouching, that hole is visible, then it's considered to be a Nevela. And it means it's not even a Trefa, it's a Nevela, it's as if it's dead already. So Rabbi Yanai subscribes to that, and therefore he says, if it's cut up to the waist, it's fine. But as soon as you go past the waist, you already are into the din of Rabbi Elazar. and the entity is considered to be a nevela. It's not a viable entity at all. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan does not subscribe to Rabbi Elazar, and therefore he thinks even all the way up to the waistline is considered to be a trefa chayo, and therefore it could live. It's not a nevela, and it will survive until you reach the point of the vital organs whereby it would not survive any longer. Amara Papa Machloket Milamato Lamalo. Their machloket is only when the items that are missing are coming from the bottom of the body upwards. That's how we explained it until now. Was it up to the knee that was missing, up to the waist that's missing, or up to the midriff of the person that's missing? About Mimalo Lamato, if you're going from the head down, I feel cold to Hotora. Even if there's a smallest entity missing, that is vital to the person's survival, and therefore it would be Torah, because that's not considered to be a birth. Someone gives birth to an entity whereby the skull is sealed up or not properly shaped. Now Rashi translates atuma over here with regards to the gogolet as meaning missing something, as opposed to atum that we saw before, which means satum, closed up. Closed up means it's missing a limb, the limb is clogged up, it is missing entirely, that's what it means satum over there. Satum there means it's not the shape or form, it's lacking shape or form, so it's missing that entire aver. Over here when it says gugolet stuma, it means that there's any piece or something missing from the skull. Imo Torah, that's not considered to be a birth, and the mother is considered to be Torah. Amar Gilo, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Pelet Kamin, Afakta de Dikla, Imo Torah. A woman who gives birth to something that looks like a palm tree, then they are also, the mother is Torah. As Rashi describes over here, the entirety of the body of the individual looks like a trunk, and then all of the limbs are coming out at the top of that trunk. And instead of being the arms and legs in their proper location, the head coming out of location, they're all coming out on top, like a palm tree that has a single trunk, and then all of a sudden breaks open with all its leaves at the top. So if the entity looks like that, that's not a viable entity, it's not even considered to be a human entity, and therefore if the mother gives birth to such an item, it's not considered to be a leida. Okay, we're going to stop here, 13 lines down on the top of Chaf Dalet Amud Aleph.